Donald Trump's economic assessment. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The Republican National Convention wrapped up last night with the Donald Trump keynote. It ran an hour 15, the longest acceptance speech for four decades. Now, we're focused on the economic content. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is here. Good morning, Kimberly.
Morning, David.
So how does Donald Trump see the U.S. economy?
He sees it as being in really bad, bad shape. He pointed to falling household incomes, the trade deficit, and a growing national debt, and of course blamed these issues on the current administration, saying we really have nothing to show for all that debt.
Our roads and bridges are falling apart. Our airports are third world condition. And 43 million Americans are on food stamps.
And he tied all of these issues and more to his competitor, Hillary Clinton, who he considers to be an extension of the current administration.
Mm-hmm. So what does Mr. Trump say he would do starting Friday, January 20th, to fix these issues?
The speech was pretty light on specific policy proposals about the economy, but he did give some general themes about where his focus would be as president.
I am going to bring back our jobs to Ohio and Pennsylvania and New York and Michigan and all of America. And I am not going to let companies move to other countries, firing their employees along the way without consequence. Not going to happen anymore.
The Clinton campaign responded by releasing a statement listing all the different countries where Trump products are manufactured. Trump also called for more spending on infrastructure, which he says would create millions of jobs.
Marketplace's Kimberly Adams, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Now, this weekend marks 6 weeks since the massacre in Orlando. It was a gay nightclub, and the attack occurred on Latin night. Latino and Latina LGBT people and their families already face challenges others may not, from language barriers to fear of deportation. And that divide has become more apparent in the effort to get support to victims and their families. Marketplace's Lewis Wallace went to Orlando.
I meet Carlos Guillermo Smith in front of the downtown memorial to the Pulse victims.
It's kind of hard to look at. This happened to my community, to my people. So many of the victims were young gay Latino men. That's me.
His organization, Equality Florida, has helped raise more than $7 million for victims, one of the largest GoFundMe campaigns ever. But he says,
there were a lot of cultural obstacles to getting through this tragedy.
For example, the organizations raising funds and providing mental health support initially put out info only in English. Henry Lim is head of the Hispanic Bar Association of Central Florida. He got called in to help with bilingual legal services.
There were 321 people there that night, and many of them were undocumented, and they're afraid to come forward. So we want to make sure that these people understand that they have rights as well.
He's helped families from abroad get visas to attend memorials, and he's personally working on 6 applications for U visas for survivors. Those can give legal status to crime victims. Issa Noyola with the Transgender Law Center says all this reflects things queer, Latina, and Latino people were already facing, from fear of deportation to job discrimination and violence.
There is a beautiful community that is thriving and surviving with little to no support.
She says lots of LGBTQ organizations don't have Latinas in leadership or their issues in mind. And then lots of Hispanic groups don't necessarily want to address homophobia or transphobia.
I think that in this moment, the least that they can do is to acknowledge all of who these individuals were. And a failure to do that is continuing the violence that happened that evening.
Acknowledging the victims' full identities, she says, at least helps guarantee that the millions of dollars flowing into Orlando get to the right people. I'm Lewis Wallace for Marketplace.
If you're looking for top publishing and other media executives, they're at the convention. Cleveland, possibly, but also San Diego, where Comic-Con is in full swing. What started with comic books is now a yearly pop culture extravaganza. Normally, movie studios are there trying to whip up excitement among potential fans, but those ranks seem a little thin this time around. Marketplace's Rima Kreis explains.
We can give you abilities most men only dream of. Make you a superhero.
Last year, Fox unveiled an early trailer from Deadpool exclusively to fans at Comic-Con, and before long, it was leaked online. Matt Donnelly covers entertainment for The Wrap.
There has been an increasing concern about piracy. You know, the studios oftentimes bring really incomplete work.
Intended only for devoted fans who wait hours to get a peek. That's one reason why Fox won't be teasing Assassin's Creed or the upcoming Wolverine sequel. It's a risky decision, says Donnelly.
When you go to market with a big superhero film, you know, I think a lot of people are going to be looking to, you know, your nerds to see what they think.
I understand the promotion argument completely.
But, says Preston Patton, a former entertainment industry executive,
that's a decision for the person that invested the risk capital to make.
Fox isn't the only studio sitting out. A combination of production schedules and costs is keeping other studios away, too. I'm Rima Crace for Marketplace.
And the following is all a little remote for most of us, but for the record, Amazon's Jeff Bezos has just scooted past Berkshire Hathaway's Warren Buffett to become the third richest person in the world, net worth $65 billion. The Bloomberg ranking attributes some of this to Buffett giving away so much of his money to charity. Number one is Bill Gates, whose Microsoft stock's been doing quite well. Spanish clothing tycoon Amancio Ortega is number two. Interesting oddity. Two rich guys with very differing politics are pretty much tied at number 27, 28 richest in the world. George Soros, who prefers progressive causes, and Sheldon Adelson, who is a big Trump man. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.